The title of the talk is Looking to the Peephole. I go by the name of Wolflight on Twitter. It's probably the easiest way to find me. My name is James Elsego Jr. A little bit more about myself. I'm a systems administrator for a company, Medical Informatics Engineering. We do EMR and EHR for a large number of doctor's offices, hospitals, and clinics. And we also have EHR products. You can find them on, find some of our history on the internet. We have huge clients like Dow, Eli Lilly, Disney, and others. I'm also a CCDC alum and mentor for our current team. CCDC is the Collegiate Cyber Defense Competition. If you're not familiar with it, I encourage you to take a look at it, both as professionals or as students. If you're a professional, I hope you get involved with the organization and help improve it. I'm an aspiring InfoSec professional and evangelist. A little bit about that. This is my first time speaking at a Linux conference. I've only been to three Linux conferences. This is my first time speaking at one. I'm typically at a security conference or a HackerCon. I've spoken at a number of those. And the reason being that I'm really passionate about security. The reason why I got up speaking to begin with is one of my other bosses. I also do penetration testing, open source intelligence for a penetration tester, bulbsecurity.com. Georgia Weidman, my boss, is like, you need to get up and start speaking. You know, you're passionate about the topics, get up there and let people know. So she's the one that first started pushing me into talking. I gave a talk at B-Sides Cleveland last year about those of us in my community, the InfoSec community, breaking out of the echo chamber, and instead of talking to each other all the time, start talking to you, the end users, other administrators, and maybe not involved in the InfoSec community, and help spread some of the knowledge about security and the stuff we were talking about, and maybe help make everybody more secure, because quite frankly, as a security professional, my network is only as secure as your network is. If I do business with you and your network is compromised, then in all likelihood, my network gets compromised too. So it behooves me as a security professional to do the best I can to educate as many people as possible. So I'm only gonna talk about one topic today, but that's the purpose why I'm talking about it. Instead of just talking about a security conference, which I have in the past, but to instead try and spread the information a little bit more, maybe get to people who aren't aware of it. Speaking of CCDC, this is the most recent team from last year. As you can see, I'm twice the age of one of the guys on the team. I've been doing this for quite a while, but along with the fact that I'm a systems administrator by day, that's my day job. I'm a CCDC alum, so I've done some of this stuff in actual competitions. And then working with a penetration tester, I can say that I've seen this stuff from the other side too, which is part of what I'm gonna talk about, is in order to be a good systems administrator, I don't know how many systems administrators are in the audience, anybody? Okay, any penetration testers here? A couple, all right, so I'm gonna touch on that too because I've given this talk at a security conference as well. The only way we can be really good at doing our jobs is by understanding what the other people are doing. We're gonna go into that. But I'm not an expert. I don't profess to be an expert. I'm not an expert in this topic. I'm not an expert in any other topic. The secret, though, of being a good systems administrator is that I know when I don't know the answer, and I know how to find out who to go ask, and I'm not afraid to ask them. If you can't, if my boss told me, fix this problem, and I refused to ask anybody else, and I sat there for 8 hours and wasted my time and we hadn't solved the problem, he should fire me. Because if I could have asked somebody in 15 minutes and gotten the answer, and we could have got it fixed in the first half hour, we could have gone on to doing something else. We maybe could have gone on dealing with other issues. So it's all about knowing who to ask and when. So Sun Tzu, in the 6th century, basically said, if you only know yourself and you don't know your enemy, you are doomed to fail. So as a systems administrator, this goes on with the fact that if I only know my systems and I don't know the activities of the potential attackers and I don't know what those attacks look like, I cannot defend against them. I only know my stuff. I only know my systems, my baselines, my configs. That's all I know. I don't know what an attack looks like. I don't know how to recognize one. Then I'm never going to recognize one. And it's a sad fact that in almost every case, every news story you've seen, the only way a penetration was found out about it, the only way a hack was found out about it was after the fact. You don't hear about the ones that are caught beforehand. You only hear about the ones afterwards. And it's usually not the business that recognized it. Somebody told them it happened. either the malicious actor or somebody else said, by the way, you were hacked last week. 6 weeks ago, we did this to you. Only the web face-to-facements are pretty obvious. And even then, it's usually not the systems administrator or the website administrator that sees it. It's somebody calling in and going, hey, do you know your website's messed up? So how do we find out about these things? And how do we know about them ahead of time? So the title of my talk is Looking Through the Peephole. So what is a peephole? Well, the dictionary definition, usually a small hole through which one looks to see the outside. Typically in a door, it is a fisheye lens, allowing the person on the inside a wider view of the outside while restricting the view from the outside to a very small area of the inside. So looking through the peephole, even if all you need to know is that it's really the pizza guy outside, right? This isn't new either. Sun Tzu's theory back in the 6th century isn't new. It's 15 centuries later. What Sun Tzu said is still accurate today. The concept of a peephole in your door isn't new either. We've known this concept for a long time as well. Having a small opening through which a defender can see a much wider view outside of the activity outside while presenting a very small target to the interior is not a new concept. In fact, so many of our technologies already take this into effect. Closed circuit TV, sonar for ships, periscopes, radar, allowing somebody to look at a small object and see something much wider. I don't know how many of you are familiar with how a periscope actually works and why they actually use them. Typically, a periscope isn't used like in World War II. I mean, they did for aiming torpedoes, but submarines still use periscopes today. Even with all the other fancy technology they still have, they still use a simple periscope because before they come up to the surface, they raise up the periscope depth, raise the periscope, and do a complete 360 circle to see if there's anybody else near them. Because there may be somebody sitting there who has their engines turned off, who's not making any noise, and they don't want a collision. So this isn't new. We do this all the time. So the concept of being aware of your environment, knowing what's going on, and having an understanding while providing some way to protect yourself on the inside is something that we understand across all of our culture. We use it every day. It's a technique we already understand. So how do we apply that in the IT industry? How do we apply that as systems administrators? How do we use that as security professionals? What method of looking through a peephole can we use? Well, I'm going to illustrate one. OSEC. Some people call it OSEC, some people call it OSEC. I prefer to use Daniel Cid, the original creator of it. He says OSEC, so I'm going to say OSEC. It's an open source project. So again, I'm here speaking at Ohio Linux Fest. Like I said, I'm happy to be speaking at a Linux event. But it is an open source project. It's FOSS. Anybody can get involved in this project. And in fact, people have taken the source code and done other stuff with it, and I'll talk about that later. So what OSEC is an IDS, and in some cases, IPS solution. So of the systems administrators in here, if I say IDS, what is the most common one you're going to come across? Anybody? Snort. SourceFire, a couple others. But when you think IDS, if I say IDS, most of you think Snort. I'm going to illustrate some problems with Snort, though, that are obvious, especially the people in the penetration testing industry and across the security industry as a whole, that there are problems with using something like Snort. Snort has its place. I'm not going to say it doesn't, but there are issues with it. Or any other solution like Snort. Some vendor wants to sell you a firewall that does deep packet inspection, turn around and run. All right? What happens when they say deep packet inspection is they're telling you they're going to go inside every packet. Well, what if I'm using encryption? Well, we can still see inside of it. Really, so you can break the encryption. That's what you're telling me. So you're like the NSA, because the NSA is breaking everybody's encryption anyway. So when they tell you they can do deep packet inspection, no, they can't. If I'm using encrypted traffic, you can't see what's inside that traffic, unless you're the NSA. No. So the other problem also is the fact that I heard this yesterday at the conference I just left, GERCON, is the fact that somebody was using an IDS solution on a network, a vendor-supplied one, and they were complaining about the fact it was slowing down their traffic because they were sending so much stuff through it. and so much SSL traffic that it was trying to decipher that it was slowing down their network. The solution was, they wanted to hide the traffic. So they said, well, send it over SSL. Just hide the traffic from the IDS solution. It won't slow down your network anymore because it won't even try and get into it. His concept was, if you're going to hide everything from the IDS, then just turn it off. You're not going to use it anyway, right? If you're going to try and hide the stuff from the IDS, turn the IDS off. You're wasting time. Quit wasting the power, quit wasting the time and effort. So a solution like Snort has very limited scope. I'm going to talk about the scope. So the difference between a solution like OSEC, and believe me, OSEC's only one of them, but it highlights a concept, and the concept is what's important. What solution you might choose is up to you, or even if you choose to use any solution at all. That's a decision you have to make. But I'm going to show you that there are other solutions and other methodologies. So what I'm going to liken Snort to in this case is the traffic cop who's stopping the drunk driver, and I'm going to provide an allegory that says that OSEC is more like your burglar alarm system at your home or your own personal defense stopping a burglar. And those are two completely different concepts. Stopping the drunk driver while being performed by the police officer, the police officer doesn't stop the criminal breaking into your house until after the fact. Right? That's the way the world works. So, if there's a drunk driver out on the road, and I'm at home in my house, sitting in my recliner watching TV, what does it matter to me? In the end, nothing. I mean, it's true if I see it on the news and that drunk driver hit somebody and killed somebody, it's a pretty sad story, especially if it was one of my family members, that's even worse. But by and large, the activities of that drunk driver out on the highway, if I'm sitting at home, do not affect me unless he comes down my neighborhood and rams into my house and ends up in my living room. That's a different story. So the cop stopping the drunk driver is important. And yes, there are times when stuff happens. Like I said, that drunk driver may drive through my house. There's a problem. All right? So stopping the drunk driver is an issue, but it's not the only issue. Because you see, when you're at home, you need another solution. Some way to stop that bad guy. Because unfortunately, the cops don't show up at the time that the bad guy breaks in. They show up afterwards. That's the way the world works. I'm not advocating the use of lethal force to protect yourself. That's an individual decision. What I'm trying to illustrate here, but this is the truth, all right? And this is what's going to happen in your network, all right? This is the same thing that happens with systems administration. This is an extreme case with personal defense, but this is what happens in real life. When an attack happens, you sometimes don't find out about it until afterwards, all right? We're going to touch on some of that later, too. So again, got to stop the drunk driver, got to do something. But I got to do something about my own personal defense, too. I got to find a way to stop the attack, or at least be aware of the fact that the attack is happening at my door. I got to have that peephole. I got to be able to see who's outside. I got to be able to see what's going on. OSEC is going to provide me a method that Snort doesn't. Because see what happens with Snort, or any other typical network-based IDS, which when I say IDS, most people think something like Snort, which is a network-based IDS. So the concept here is I'm going to show you another solution that's not network-based. And that's going to be an important factor. Because when I put Snort on a network, and we have our own network-based IDS solution, it sees what's on that segment. Whatever segment that IDS solution, network IDS solution, Snort or other, I'm not pointing fingers at Snort because it works. Whatever network segment is plugged into that device, that's the traffic it sees. Now, if you look at this picture, what's the problem with that picture? It sees the traffic on that segment. It doesn't see the traffic on the other segments. So if somebody in my organization comes in and plugs in a USB device that has malware on it, or downloads something off the internet that didn't come over that network segment, it can go to all those other network segments and it never got caught. That traffic cop was not on that street. He wasn't on my street when that drunk driver came down and rammed into my house. He wasn't there to stop that drunk driver. So network-based IDS, while it has its place, usually on the perimeter gateway coming in the network, does great things at stopping the stuff coming into my network or maybe trying to get out of my network, but it does nothing for protecting the inside of my network, all those devices connected together. So again, like that drunk driver going down the street, that traffic on that network segment to my workstation, if my neighbor in the next office over gets infected and his malware tries to come over to my machine, that network-based solution did not catch it. So again, I'm sitting in my recliner at home, and unfortunately now something's happened. So we need a way to do something about this. And there are already possible ways. Antivirus, it doesn't work. Anybody should go to any InfoSec conference, most of us say it doesn't work. It's behind the times, they can't keep up. Thousands and thousands of malware are written every single day. They write rules for a couple hundred, and you get an antivirus update. It doesn't work. Both as end consumers and as businesses, antivirus is a failed solution. We can't turn it off. We need it because it still does do what it can, but it's a failed solution. It can only be one part of the picture because security is about peeling onions. Put this layer here, put that layer there. So we've already put the network layer in place. What do we do to protect those individual workstations? What do we do to protect the individual server? How do we stop activity from happening that's not being seen by that network cop? So along comes a solution like OSEC. When Daniel Sid postulated it, there were a couple other commercial solutions that people have been thinking about. And he's like, we need to find a way to stop the stuff at its location, on an individual host. Because quite frankly, what matters to me is what happens at my home, not what happens out on the highway. It's nice and interesting news, and they sure want to blare it all over the TV every night about all the activities going on. But what matters to my security is what happens on my servers, on my workstations, and I need to know about it as soon as possible. And the network cop can't catch it. And the way that OSEC does this is you already have tools on your systems. They already exist. There are already things like SecureLog in Linux, all the other logs in Windows, administration, system, performance. You know, all the logs we have available at our exposure are there. Now, the sad fact is when something happens, if you don't know about it when it happens, then it's probably going to be weeks later before you go back and start digging through the logs. You need to be alerted about it as soon as possible. Now, you can write your own custom rules to watch all your logs if you want. That's certainly a solution, and people have done it. I remember for CCDC competition, we tried writing that stuff. We tried writing scripts that would go in and monitor our logs and see what was going on. That's a painful process. It's something no systems admin really wants to go to all the trouble to do. So some people go and buy commercial solutions to monitor their logs, which are fine, but you need to have something in place. But if all the logs are in one location and you're in another, and you've got like, I've got 80 servers in my data center, if I have to go on each individual server to do some incident response or find out what happened after the fact, it's way too late. I need to know about it now, or as close to now as possible, and I can't go digging through all those machines to find it. I need one centralized place to look. If you don't have logs turned on in your server, or you don't want to use logs, then I don't know what to tell you. I don't, quite frankly, you might not want to be here, because logs are an important part of a system administrator's day. We don't always go into them, but if they're not available to us, so we can't solve a problem. A server crashes, at the very least, I'm going back and looking at var log messages, or I'm going back and look at D messages to find out what the heck happened. But at some point, I'm looking at a log. So when something happens, I need access to those logs, and we need to find a way to look at them. The way OSEC works, OSEC by and large doesn't care what your end agent out there is. If you want to run an agent on a Windows system, you want to run an agent on a Solaris system, you know, there are agents out there. The OSEC server itself must run on a Linux machine. It's a Linux package. They're talking about making a Windows server version, but I don't think it'll happen anytime soon. So the basic configuration is that there's an OSEC server, which, by the way, if you only wanted to put it on one machine, like just your desktop or just your laptop, you could do that as a server agent all in one, as a standalone. But the idea is that those agents talk back to the server. Now, I'm an InfoSec professional, and I can tell you that when you've got two machines talking to each other, if I can get in between them, I can capture all your traffic, wonderful. Well, the good thing is that OSEC uses encrypted traffic so that somebody can't get man in the middle and find out what you're doing on that machine and try and stop it. There's the key that's created by the server and it's given to an agent. The agent knows that's my server, that's the only server I trust. And when the agent communicates back, the server knows, okay, that's a trusted agent. I believe what that machine's telling me. Or at least that's the best, to the best of its knowledge, but I'll trust it because it has my key. A simple way this looks, like, man, I can't take the time to learn how to use a new tool. Yeah.
Well, you said not likely to be available for Windows, but has anyone tried compiling on Cygwin?
I think there are some people that have tried running it on Cygwin as, you know, as a server, but I don't think they've had very much success. Cygwin is a working environment. It's not the best environment. If you're going to do Linux, it's better off to just be in a Linux environment. I use both. I'm not going to say I bash Windows a lot, but I do use Windows. Being a security professional, I can't stick to one operating system. I pretty much had to be exposed to a whole bunch of them. a little bit about that. I got 10 servers at home, 2 workstations. I have 6 laptops. There's a bunch of different operating systems, but I do a lot of research. So yeah. I'm not going to bash any one operating system. They all have their uses. But so how hard is it? I got to learn a new tool. Man, I got to learn how to set this up. I got to learn how to configure it. Well, the advantage is that OSIX configuration files are all in XML. Even if all you understood was English and had never touched XML before, it only takes a few minutes of really reading an XML file to start going, okay, that's this, and get some understanding. So the key things here, just a little idea, is there's a rule ID that has a parent rule that looks inside a log message for a match, and that match has a description. They can get more in depth, but this is a simple basic definition of an OSIC rule. If in any given log, this is, by the way, only looking at Apache logs, but if this Apache log has a line in it that matches the word error, then this is one of the Apache error logs or error messages. If it's a warning, then it's a warning message. And the rules start to step out from there, but they have a basic fundamental concept. So if you've ever read logs before or had to do incident response and go, man, that happened and now I gotta go dig through it. You're trying to write your own grep rules to try and go through logs, and I've done it. You're trying to write your own grep rules to go through logs. It can be real painful. They provide some simple XML rules that let you go through them pretty quickly and parse them for you. Here's an example of an actual Apache log. And it said, this is the basic one, by the way, that says rule 3115 is a level 13. Means the URL is too long. It's higher than allowed on a host browser. This is a possible attack. And that's a level 13. And the one below it's a level 5. Because that's a web server 500 error. It happens. The difference in alert levels, though, are key because of the fact that as a systems administrator, I want to get alerted on some things right now. I want to get alerted on other things maybe not so important. Or maybe that alert needs to go to somebody else, not me. Or maybe, just maybe, the alert is low enough that we still need to keep track of the event for incident response later. But I don't need to get woke up in the middle of the night. So it's nice to know that it happened, but it's not critical. I'll deal with it tomorrow. Because it's not just Apache. You can write rule sets for anything. There are a whole bunch of core rule sets that are already in existence. And or if you don't like those, or you have another custom application that has its own logs, you can write rule sets to look at those logs, whatever your application is, if it's not one of the existing rule sets. When you get the rule sets, you don't make modifications to those rules, like the Apache rules XML file. I don't make changes to that one. It's highly recommended that you don't make changes to the basic rule set. Instead, they provide another file called local rules, which are local to that server and that agent, so that you can have one agent with one set of rules and another agent with another set of rules, all running in the same basic core config, but their local rules may be different. And that's the file that you make changes. So you'll see that I have a rule here that goes back to that same parent rule, that 3115 that we looked at a moment ago, that says if the source IP is within this range, I can change the alert level to 2. If it's rule, that one with 31122 is from that range, Lower the alert level to 2. Same thing with that one down there. The reason being, that's the IP range that my devs are on upstairs. And if they're doing something with one of the servers and they're testing something, I don't want to get alerted about it. If some dev in the middle of the night, and our devs work all kinds of weird hours too, we have pretty good flex time at my company. If you don't want to be there 8 to 5, that's fine. As long as you get your hours in somewhere, they don't care. So some of our devs work in the middle of the night. They don't have to be in the office. So if they do something in the middle of the night, I don't want my phone going off. My boss doesn't want his phone going off. So if it's from the devs, if they VPN in from home and they're now coming in from their workstation access, don't alert me about it. But keep the record of it. It still happened. Keep a record of it. Because the sad fact is, no matter whether you're using a network IDS or a host-based IDS, and you get false positives, even a false positive is important. Heard a great talk day before yesterday, at GERCON, about an IPS solution. And the man made the great concept that says, even your false positives are important because every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's a fact of physics. And it's the same thing in IT. Something happened. Even if it was a good thing, something happened to kick off that alert. And those are important too. So again, even if my devs do it, we still need to keep track of it. The notifications usually look something like this. I get an email or a page saying that at such and such time, such and such happened. You'll notice this is looking at Varlog Secure. Somebody tried to get into the system, tells me their IP, and lets me do something with it if I want. There are key things you can do here. OSIC is a HIDS. It's an intrusion detection system, but it does have some IPS capability. In other words, now that I've detected this attacker, I can now prevent them from doing anything further. They didn't get into my system. I got notified. They didn't get in. Let's lock them out. I don't want them to keep banging on my box for the next 5 hours. I don't want to get the logs filled up with more. I don't want to have 3 meg of logs with the same guy trying another attack. So let's lock him out. Let's add him to the firewall drop script. Drop that IP. Let's put him in host deny so they can't use SSH. Sorry, we're not going to listen to that IP. We're a global company. I can't lock out every single IP. What if some guy is using IP misdirection and it looks like he's coming from a particular IP? That may be one of my client's IPs. That may be a client next week's IP. I can't add that to my firewall drop script and add it to my host deny list and leave it there forever. The fact that the internet is dynamic and they're reusing IPs all the time means that IP may actually be needed or need to be recognized by me at some point. So again, in this case, I use the default. 10 minutes later, let's allow that IP access again. The indicator there being in most cases, the attacker will get frustrated after a couple minutes and go somewhere else. Because most malicious actors are going to go for the lowest hanging fruit, they're going to go for the easiest target, and if they can't get me in the first couple minutes and I lock them out, I'm sorry, they're going to go to you. But lock them out yourself and force them to go somewhere else. So the secret to all this is that I don't know how your organization works. I don't know how you do your things at your home, because you should seriously implement this at home too. I don't know how you do what you do, so I can't tell you how to configure yours. I would be willing to bet that even you, when you think, okay, I'll set it up to do this, I'll set it up to do that, will still not get it right. It takes constant tuning. We still constantly adjust our rules. We still find out somebody does something, well, now I got to write a rule to deal with that. You know, the devs are constantly trying something new. All right, we've had new projects come along. We've had to we're an in-house dev shop, so we write software. I've had to get with the developers and say, okay, no matter what you do, can you please have it put out a log, preferably in syslog format, so that I can go back and parse it. So when you have an error, we can see it. We can go back and do incident response. Because as a systems administrator, when something happens, I want to be able to go back and find out where it happened. Because this isn't just about security. Because I can write the rules for anything, I can have it watch other stuff that's not even security related. Because see, the other good thing about OSEC is the fact that it also watches the file system. So is anybody in this room familiar with a little project called Tripwire? Pretty much. So the concept behind Tripwire is that you install Tripwire, it goes through your system and sees what packages or what files are on your system, and then watches for changes. So that if a malicious actor, one of them bad guys that, unfortunately I know some of them, one of those bad guys does something and tries to make a change to your system, you get an alert about it. You know, Tripwire's fine, they went commercial, and I've got nothing against Tripwire, I've used it in the past. OSET can do the same thing. It has a rule set that lets you say, I want to watch this portion of my file system, this portion of my file system, this portion of my file system. A little personal experience with that. I was at B-Side Chicago back in February, and or April, and one of the speakers there was giving me a talk on how to evade an IDS. He had never seen OSEC before. He goes by the name of Beltface on Twitter, Mark Kitka. He had never seen OSEC. So he went through his whole presentation about getting onto a system, making a change in Etsy password, creating his own user, giving that user a UID and a GUID of 0, and making that user effectively root. And he went on about making changes to this file and that file. And I didn't say anything in his talk. I probably should have, but I didn't. That was the inspiration for this talk, by the way. That first made me want to give it. Because I used OSEC on a regular basis. And if somebody makes a change to something in my file system, on the directories that I think are important in a Linux system, especially Etsy password, Etsy shadow, Etsy groups, those are pretty damn important to me. I want to know if a change is made, and I didn't authorize it, or my boss didn't authorize it, somebody didn't say, add that new user, or somebody tries to get into a group they weren't supposed to be in, I want to know about it. So OSEC does things like that. It watches the file system for me. So at B-Sides Detroit in June, I gave this talk, and I mentioned the fact that I had seen a guy talk about evading an IDS solution, and it's true. Everything he talked about in his talk would evade snort. He was coming in over SSL, so all of his traffic was hidden. He was getting on the system, he was making changes. I said, yeah, but I can detect those changes. He goes, well, yeah, if you use something like Tripwire. I said, no, the other stuff you're doing, I can detect that with OSEC, but even if you manage to evade something and get on the system, a host-based IDS that's properly configured can monitor for those changes in your system. There's a log somewhere, because he also talked about erasing the logs. He's like, part of his talk was, I get in, I do all that I want, and then I go and erase the logs. You've got to be real careful, because you erase the logs, and a smart system admin might see a gap in the logs. You can't erase all the logs. Maybe you got to time stomp them. I'm like, the good thing is that with OSEC's agent server model, you try and erase the logs on that system you got into. You broke into the system. There's a record of it. You try and erase it. You make changes to the file system. I'm going to get alerted. You do other activities on the system. There's other logs about it. Oh, and all those logs get sent over to my OSEC server, too. So I don't care that you erase them over here. I still have some way of going back and seeing what you did. Some way of getting alerted about it. Some way of seeing that it happened. So I refuted his talk to some degree in my talk at B-Sides Detroit. At B-Sides Las Vegas, there's three conferences in DEFCON or in Vegas that all happen in the same week. There's Black Hat, B-Sides Las Vegas, and then DEFCON. So it's an entire week of security. At B-Sides Las Vegas, he gave his talk, and he said, by the way, Wolf Flight says he can detect that I do this, he can detect that I do that. And then at GERCON on Thursday, he did it again. He said, all the stuff that I'm going to tell you about my talk, there are ways to stop it. Use a host-based IDS like OSEC. So there are ways to stop those kind of activities. So the main thing is to have that security implementation in place. Do not rely on what's on your network, and do not rely on something as simple as antivirus on a workstation. There are other solutions out there, like OSEC and other host-based IDS. So if you haven't seen a host-based IDS before, you haven't tried one, at least try this one. It's open source. It's free. Install it on a system, see how easy it is to configure, and see what it does. And if you're a security professional, a penetration tester, some of you raised your hands, it's just as important as for a penetration tester to know what an attack looks like to a defender. So you're not going to really know all of the attacks that are coming against you until you implement something like this in place. And I see attacks every single day, all day, come through my logs. I watch them. I say, yeah, that guy got locked out. And I watch IPs. Because if there's somebody that comes and hacks on me today, and then comes and hacks on me again, I need to know about it. Not only that, we have multiple disparate locations. So if somebody attacks this location over here, remember, all those servers, I can't be logged into each and every single one of them and go through all of their logs. If this guy tries to attack this server over here that's at this client's location, and then he tries to attack this server here that's at another client's location, maybe it's random coincidence that he just happened to attack two of my clients. Or maybe he's managed to figure out both of those people are my clients. Maybe I have a whole other security issue that I need to worry about. So yes, I use it to watch who's attacking me and when and why. And I watch their attack methodologies. And the person that tries to make the changes to the system, like Beltface did, well, he tries to make a change to the time, or he tries to make a change to the logs, I still get notified. Using O6 ability to watch the file system for the files that you tell it to watch, it can watch your file system and notify you if somebody tries to make a change. Even if it's a valid change. Even if it's something as simple as like my boss decided to add a new user. It's a valid change. But maybe he didn't notify everybody. And they go, wait a minute, whoa. Why did that just happen? And this comes up. Why did that just happen? Who just added that user on that system? Again, incident response, seeing what just happened. It's not like, well, we added that user and we didn't bother to tell you. And those kind of things look like this. Get a nice little, and it's pretty similar to Tripwire. It watches for the checksum to change. It says, okay, something in this file system in slash Etsy, and I really watch slash Etsy, because remember, Etsy is where password, shadow, and group are, so I really watch Etsy. Don't watch var. You watch var, you'll get tons of alerts. Please don't. Sorry, I've seen people try and do it. It's like, what are you doing, man? You're getting alerts that are then generating another alert. You're just circular logic. So anyway, I get a notification that the sum has changed. Now, unfortunately, my boss, the CEO that hired me, he had this crazy idea since I was already watching the file system. We use Git upstairs. He goes, why don't we just use this? We said, we're using Git for revision control. And then you're turning around doing something like this that's monitoring for changes in the file system. Why don't you just monitor for the changes in the file system and let, you know, we'll use you for version control? Because I don't know what the change was. I only know that the change happened. It's up to the good systems administrator to be able to go back and know whether or not that config file has been changed correctly. Communication, change management, all good things of a good systems administrator and network administrator. So no, I couldn't do his version control for him and let him know, well, 6 weeks ago when you changed that file, this is what it was back then. You're going to have to keep using Git for that because I can't do that. That's not, I mean, unfortunately, this isn't designed to be your version control system. So again, you're like, well, I'm getting all these logs. You got hundreds of servers or thousands of servers. They might be generating a lot of logs. They might be generating a lot of alerts. Well, I found out about a little project called Splunk. And if you haven't seen Splunk, it's another open source project. If you haven't seen Splunk, I highly encourage you to take a look at it. But if you don't want to take a look at Splunk, there's other solutions out there, ELSA and a couple others, that are designed to let you take a look at aggregate data visually. Using simple search technology, using regexes and stuff like that, so that you can say, okay, at 2 o'clock in the morning, what was all the activity that happened at 2 o'clock? On Saturday at 9 p.m., when none of my people were at work, how many potential accesses were there on those systems? You define your search terminologies, and it provides you in a nice visual thing, and then you can dig down further. So yes, even though I'm getting all these alerts, and the alerts are important, remember that the alerts, like when we're going to get a text message or a page, those are on the ones that I said I need to know about right now. But I can't ignore all the other ones. Like I said, even a false positive is still information that I need to know. It's still a lot of data. I mean, if you ever dealt with logs, they end up being a lot of data, so you need a way to find them. So we end up using Splunk. So like I said, so if you're looking at like, I'm going to implement this thing and it's still going to generate tons of stuff, I'm not going to have time to look at it. There are ways to manipulate the data and get an easier view of it. So I just wanted to point out that there are ways to take a look at the data. So O6. So Daniel Cid came up with this great concept, and other people have done other ones that are similar. So OSEC by itself as a open source project is not a standalone concept. I don't know if you're familiar with Alien Vault. Alien Vault is a commercialized version of OSEC. They have a free version that's called OSEM. At their core, they still use the same OSEC engine. And Security Onion, I don't know how many are familiar with Security Onion as a Linux distribution, as a security distribution. Security Onion, when Doug Burks came out of Security Onion comes with Snort and OSEC. Because Doug, when he set up Security Onion, understood that Snort does the network side, OSEC does the host-based side. So Security Onion comes with a Snort appliance, and it can act as your OSEC server, all in one operating system. So when he created security distro, he already had an understanding there is a difference between a network appliance and a host-based appliance. It seriously aids in incident response. Because when something happens, unfortunately, you usually don't know about it when it happens. You find out about it afterwards. OSEC, again, enables an incident response. You get key indicators. Something happened. Okay, I need to go back and look. So I'm not going to go look through every single log to start with. I'm going to go look through my OSEC logs and see which of the alerts that I didn't get notified about but may still be there. So it aids in that incident response. And again, because I'm watching the file system, again, that also aids in the incident response. The sad fact, I don't know about some of the other systems administration, but there's a lot of incident response almost on a daily basis, even for simple stuff. Something crashed, server went down, the service isn't working. Why isn't it working? What happened? I do a little micro incident response all the time. So like I said, so my talk was called Looking Through the Peephole. Being able to take a small view and open up into a wider picture. As a systems administrator, I need a way to see really quickly as much of the activity that's happening to me as possible. I don't have time to go through all of it. None of us do. On a Windows system, it's like 7 logs. It's like ungodly amounts of information. You need to be able to find out what's going on with a small view of the key indicators so you have an idea what the bigger picture is. What are those attackers doing to you? Red team versus blue team. I touched on the fact that as a blue team, as a systems administrator, I need to know what the attacks look like. What are they doing to my systems? For penetration testers, I've given this community security conference, for a penetration tester out there, if they've never seen something like a host-based IDS, if they're like belt-faced and they thought they were evading one and they didn't know that a host-based IDS existed, and somebody on the other end, like me, has a host-based IDS, they're going to get detected. So as a security person who's doing that kind of business, if they had never seen it, then they only knew half the picture. If you only know half the picture, you're doomed to fail. So I invite you to go to OSEC.net. Take a look at it. It's a great open source project. I'm a big proponent of FOSS myself. And take a look at the bigger picture. I've only given you a really small view of what OSEC is about. I hope I've opened up your minds to the concept that maybe there are other solutions. Maybe a host-based solution would work for me. I sincerely hope you at least try and implement one, because the other solutions that you're using do not tell the whole picture. Thank you again. My name is James L. Siegel, Jr. I've got a couple of things after my name. I'm at Wolflight on Twitter. I can easily be reached there. My personal website, WFTIS.com. My personal email address there, my WFTIS address.com there. I was told this morning I could put it back on my slides today. I just haven't done it yet because I didn't go back in and edit it. I got distracted talking a few minutes before I did this talk. James@bulbsecurity.com, because like I said, I also do OSINT for a penetration testing company on the side. So James@bulbsecurity.com is my other one. I'm happy to answer questions at any of those. So if you have a question about the last time I gave this talk, I had emails after. How do I do this? How do I do that? Like I said, I'm not an expert on OSEC. But if I don't know the answer, we can certainly walk down the trail to find it together. Because if you have a question, it's probably a question I might have in the future too. And I'm a big proponent of, like I said, breaking out of the echo chamber and sharing information. So we're not in this alone. Does anybody have any questions? I'm sure there have, but There's exploits against everything. There is no secure code at this point. I mean, I deal with security professionals, and they write code, and they think it's secure, and then it gets broken, too. Anything that can be made by man can be broken by man. And if there's code out there that can be broken, I'm sure there is. And it wouldn't be hard, as it was pointed out to me by Beltface, if somebody found out that OSIC was installed on a system, then start taking actions against OSIC. Understand that it's there, and then start, well, then let's find the OSIC server. Let's start removing some of those alerts. So but it's layers. Security is about layers. So put this layer in place as well.
Can you run two servers on the same network to monitor each other?
To monitor each other? That's actually a very good idea. So the concept is that the agents can only have one server, but a server can also be an agent. If you do run a standalone, if you decide to do it as a standalone, you're actually installing the server and the agent on the same system. And then the agent on that system talks to itself, but it doesn't have to. So when you install a server or a standalone, it's designed to monitor itself, but you can have that server be an agent of another server. So yes, so you can daisy chain them. You can't have those agents talk to two servers at once. That you can't do, because like I said, it uses secure communication. That key only exists between the two machines. So there is that part. But yeah, you can't have a server monitor a server.
Could you install two agents on one machine?
No. According to Daniel Sid, no. I think people have tried it, but it's not working. It'd be an interesting concept, but having two agent processes running and then they'd be reading the same config file.
Well, yeah, so you might be able to
convince them that their config files in another location, but it's an open source project. If you want to do it, yeah, you have to point the agent, the running agent, at a different config file instead of the standard config file. But yeah, it's open source if you wanted to do it, yeah. But out of the box, no, it's not going to do that. Anything else?
Does the traffic TCP or UDP when it talks about
TCP? You don't want to lose packets. In this case, those are important packets.
Is there any kind of heartbeat or anything like that, so that way you know the machines haven't been taken off the network from the server? Like
Not by nature itself. But then again, if you were using something like DRBD or another heartbeat solution that was watching another server and it was writing to a log, you could have rules that were set up that server just dropped off. So, I mean, there are ways to do that. That it? Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.